We're here for another episode of the Speech Uncensored podcast. My name is Leanne. I'm your host, and I'm here with Julie Fechter today. Julie, how are you?
I mean, based on the sound of my voice, not great. Sounds like I'm about to make some 900 calls. If that's still a thing, I don't know.
And Julie, I'm so glad you're here with me. You're always a rip-roaring good time. We never know what kind of chaos you're going to bring. And okay, so Julie, you're here to be a part of the One Thing series on the Speech Uncensored podcast. And the one thing is, like, this is your hot button topic. This is the thing that you could talk about for 3 hours, but we're going to unpack in 30 minutes or less.
I mean, I could talk about access to education being affordable, leading to health inequalities for a very, very long time. We'll just say that. I have lots of feelings on this. Too many, obviously.
I know. Navigating this conversation amongst our intense, like, feelings about it is going to be probably what makes this conversation the most awkward. Not our actual content, but the, like, us trying to navigate our feelings. So.
Well, yeah. I mean, especially given everything that's happened in the speech world recently, or even like social media with monetizing community information. I mean, this is a broader conversation than just the field of speech pathology, I think. But because we are speech pathologists, that's where we're going to go with it. I mean, I'm a part of a lot of different communities because of things that have happened in my life since we last saw each other. And everywhere is being monetized. Like, oh, sorry about that. I lost weight. Let me have you pay me to talk about it. Like, anyway, that's another community. I mean, oh man. Okay, go ahead.
All right. So our topic for today's episode is access, and access to education, access to information, access to tools that are going to help us be better speech and language pathologists. And so I've had the pleasure of having you on the podcast before, but if this is someone's first time, tell us a little bit more about you, Julie. What do you do? What are you up to?
Oh, well, I live in Seattle, which is one of the greatest cities. I'm a home health speech pathologist, currently, with also working in ALFs. And I actually get to take the ferry to work once or twice a week to and from. That is my Grey's Anatomy moment, where you just kind of get on, you're like, oh, hey, Meredith, how's it going? But that's just me. And, I love my job. I love home health. It's very much reach the patient where they are versus when I worked in acute, it is, how are we going to keep this person as safe, quote unquote, healthy as possible? And home health is, what are you going to do and how do I help you do that in the best way possible? So last time I was here was to talk about Parkinson's, which is still the love of my life. But I love my job so much that I have to be such a generalist. And I don't get to interact with Parkinson's as much anymore.
I love how you really succinctly described the focus of acute care versus home health. And I think that is that's what has always attracted me to outpatient too, is it's been more about like, well, what's challenging to you in your life right now as a community dweller, not a, you know, someone in the hospital, and let's address those things. I feel so much more useful and functional in that way. And when a patient is in the hospital, the primary focus is keeping them healthy and safe. And like, it's like we have to squeeze our role in our job to meet that definition. And that just doesn't do it for me, I feel.
No, and one thing, one of your other, podcastees guests, there we go, podcastees, Will. hard to swallow. He once said something to me that really just like, he was just like, well, sick people, well, I mean, mostly in the community sense, right? Sick people, it's going to be something. right? So like when we're solely focused on the lungs, their kidneys are going wrong because they're dehydrated, you know? And so it's that give and take. So anyway, I could talk about that for hours, and patient centered and holistic and all. Okay. I mean, we need to move on.
That's the trouble of getting speech pathologists together. Like we will, any topic, throw a topic at a wall, it'll stick, and we'll talk about it for like 20 hours nonstop.
Well, can I ask you, Leanne, why did you take a break from the podcast? That's why I'm on here right now. I said, what the heck happened? And you had, I mean, you and I guessed what it was accidentally.
So I needed a break. I was tired. There was a lot going on. And I was draining and being drained, and my passion was drained. So when I started the podcast, I knew it was going to be a labor of love, and it was a passion project. And I was just really, like, really concerned that we all had to keep reinventing the wheel as we worked independently, without a group, without a team of other SLPs. I feel like the majority of us work in isolation from other SLPs, and we get put in this position where we have to reinvent the wheel, like on our own. And I was like, well, I need resources for this and resources for that. How do I know where to go? And do I have to pay for everything all the time? So I was like, how about I just interview these people and learn these things and have a place where all these resources are in one place, so someone could just go and access it and find what they need and use it, adapt it, modify it. And over the course of the few years, it really became a time hog, which is understandable. It's a big, big process. Mm-hmm. And then I started thinking, like, should I be paid for my time? Like, this is taking a lot of time. What would that reimbursement look like? How might I achieve that reimbursement? And then there's lots of models out there, and I explored them, but it never felt right. It never sat right with me. I never executed on anything, and I didn't like it. And then it became, well, that shifted my focus, didn't it? Like, my focus originally was to be a resource, to share information, not to ask people to pay me things just for listening out of the goodness of their hearts, or ask them to listen through advertisements that I don't know, I didn't vet, couldn't vet, don't know much about, but oh, they'll give me money. So that seems nice. And it was just the whole thing. And I was just like, this is too much. I need a break. I need to find my center again. I need to figure out what's really important to me, what the purpose of this is. Is it filling that need? Because once this podcast stops filling that need, then I don't feel an obligation to do it. Does that sound crazy?
No, I mean, I completely understand. Like, I was sending you things on Instagram, like you and I were just talking about something, and then an ad popped up at the top of my Instagram, like, get paid for doing things you're already doing. And I mean, I'm not gonna say that people shouldn't be getting paid for their efforts. Everyone should, but like, we talked about how it can lead to bias, or like, what if you're not vetting? And is this the moment where I'm gonna bring up the vibrators? Because I've really wanted to talk about them. But like, one of the things, and I talked to you about this, about how on Twitter, people go viral, right? And every time, well, not every time, but a lot of the time, the next tweet from them is a vibrator tweet. Because this vibrator company sends out messages and like, hey, bitch. Oh, are we allowed to say that? Hey, bitch, do you want to make $25 off your viral tweet by tweeting out, you know, this link to a vibrator? And a lot of people do it, and I can't really fault them, but I don't know. Do you know if that vibrator is good? Do you know if it's going to be giving those great orgasms? I don't know. Maybe they sent them ones too, but then what? I mean, I just really wanted to talk about that because I really think it's funny. But also, I mean, what happens if you try to go viral then to make the money, to get those tweets? Then people, I mean, your focus changes when it's trying to make money versus just trying to make a funny tweet. I don't know. I just really wanted to talk about the vibrators. I worked really hard on making a connection.
Despite your very graphic illustration, I think you're exactly right. Like, when, like, your focus shifts and then your product shifts. And my attitude about the podcast shifted, and I didn't like it. I didn't want it to be like that. When this podcast is about expressing my passion, sharing my interests, supporting other SLPs in this field, that gives me life. Like, that rejuvenates me. That feeds my purpose in this world. And that's why I started it. And that's why I picked it back up. Like, when I finally like refigured that out and was like, yes, that's what I want to do, despite the money that I do spend on it out of my own pocket that I don't get reimbursed for, the time it absorbs from me doing other things with other people at other times, like, this is what I want to do.
Well, and I think once we get into the, like, peeing, people paying, that's where that came from, people paying for education, which is the norm in our country in the U.S., but outside of the U.S., people get to their, I don't know about, but like, grad, med, I don't know about those, but a lot of times secondary education is free. And I was just Googling, you know, free access to education and equality, and that can determine a lot of people's paths in life. But then once we get to like continuing ed, yes, it can help me further my career to take all these great CE classes and have them on my cute little resume. But in the end, who's the one who suffers if I don't have that money? And it's our patients. And it just, it kind of, it hurts my heart a little bit to know that I spent all my money on my body in the past few years with excess skin removal. And instead of my patients, like, getting access to really great CEs, I paid to look hot. And it totally worked, just saying. But you won't be seeing me after this 2 years, 100-pound loss. But, like, it's the patients who suffer when the access to education gets really expensive for the clinicians. Because, I mean, mine was totally selfish and whatnot. But lots of people have families. Lots of people are struggling to pay for their day-to-day lives, especially, we don't want to talk about inflation. That's not my area. But, like, groceries are more expensive, and now I'm being offered and sold to constantly, and this is the best way to help your patient. This is the only way to help your patient. But what about those people who have other obligations and their patients? So that's one of my big problems. But people do deserve to get paid for their work. I'm not trying to say they don't. Like, I wish I could throw money at you, Leanne, but I spent all my money on my body. No.
Well, Julie, even though you have that viewpoint that you spent all your money on your body, aren't you going to ASHA?
Yes. My boss okayed that expense. Because I actually, to be fair, I do get a lot of money for CEs. Do I always use them? No, because right now in my, like, COVID brain, like, the trauma, it's hard to gear up that energy to learn. We're all surviving right now. Well, some people have moved on. I have not. My N95 wearage usage has not gone down. But my boss and I were talking about my home health job, and I was like, yeah, I want to go to ASHA this year too. Get new information, then I'm actually going to come back and discuss it with my coworkers, which I'm really excited about.
That's awesome. And see, Julie, I think that brings up a really, really important area for our conversation. Why is the onus on us to spend our money on continuing education? How is this not 100% our workplace's responsibility to make sure that their employees are trained and utilizing the most updated resources and tools that are out there? Why is it on us to spend our money on being badass SLPs?
Now you're tapping into a lot. Oh man, I just forgot the question. Oh, the onus of money. And I mean, we could go into that with being like profit-based healthcare. Like, and I mean, there are ways that we can prove to these companies that our education, our getting fees, getting swallow studies will help save them money in the end. But a lot of times it's focused on short-term gains versus longer-term. Like paying for thickened liquids in SNFs is really expensive. And in the end, it is cheaper to get a swallow study to see how they're doing to get them off. But it's really difficult for people to see the long-term over that short-term. Like, I think for profit, and then, I mean, we could even go into how productivity, they want us to be seeing our patients. That makes them money. Not my current job. I'm not talking shit on my current job. I love my current job. I love you. I love my bosses. And I'm not being sarcastic.
Yeah. No, I get that vibe. You're being totally honest right now. Okay. I like that you talked about, it's not just a financial aspect of continuing education. It's also a time-based issue. We're very rarely given time within our 9 to 5 to do continuing ed. If we do, they squeeze it in over our lunch hour. They're like, on top of everything else, now you don't get a break. Now you don't get to rest your brain. Now you don't get to enjoy your meal or just check out from the world for half an hour. You're now going to do some learning that's been prearranged for you. On the other hand, then you have to take time outside of the rest of your life. You have to do it on the weekend. You have to do it after hours. It's up to you. I take umbrage with that. I think that's garbage. What other professions out there are asking you to excel at your job outside of your job hours? Like, you know, teachers have to do a lot with a little, and they often spend a lot of their own money resourcing their job. But are they, I could stand corrected, but I don't believe that they're asked to do continuing education or in services outside of their working hours, outside of their pay time, like we are. We're expected to.
I have no idea, because this has been my only job my entire life. I have no idea. Like, I mean, other than food, Hoagie Yogi in college. But I have no idea if other people are expected to excel outside of their working hours. Because even, like, I'll be honest, the first 5-6 years of my career, before I learned that everything I'd ever been taught was wrong, all of my money and time went to travel. And I'm not ashamed to say that. I've been to almost 60 countries. I have gone swimming with whales. I've had some really fucking incredible experience, beat that out, in my life. And I don't know if I was ever impressed upon, you're going to have to continue to learn over and over again. I don't know. I think a lot of what we're talking about can go, I don't even know if we've even broached this subject, going back to grad school. Like, I even told my grad program at the end, like, I don't feel like I learned how to treat patients. I learned about diagnosing. I learned about, I don't even know, no offense to my grad program. We don't want to talk about that. But like, I don't know. I feel like a lot of it after I learned that everything I'd learned was basically wrong, I was like, okay, so now you have to spend all this time. And now I feel like my life is a whole bunch of speech shit constantly. Like, after work, I'm looking at something going, oh, look at how cool that is. Versus before, I was, oh, look at how wonderful Amalfi Coast is in Italy. And it's become almost a part of a hobby. And I don't really like that. I do want to get back to traveling. Well, right now sounds kind of miserable. But I don't know. A lot of it is get put on us after grad school, after work. And I actually, like I said, I have a great job now. I get a lot of CE days. I have like modules within my organization. I get time to work on that. I don't know. So I feel like I'm complaining about something that has almost been resolved for me.
But Julie, like, you've worked at other places that don't offer the same support as your current environment. So, like, you know that this is real. Just because you have found like an actual good employer with actual good, like, balance there, that doesn't mean you don't have like things to talk about that really apply to the vast majority of us.
True. I mean, I was a SNF SLP for however many years, and I was never asked to do this, but I have seen other people say they were even asked to clock out to go to the bathroom because they have to meet their productivity. And so, yes, I do know what it's like being in those spots. And it sucks because, like, it's such a systemic issue that you and I can't even talk about it in all-encompassing terms for an hour. We'd have to discuss this for 7 years.
Yeah, there's so many layers here that are contributing to the problem, that are part of the problem, that create the problem, that continue the cycle of the problem. Like, it's not just one thing, and it's not a simple talk. But yeah, it's an important discussion to have and to start. So my hope with this episode, if anything, is that it gets people thinking and evaluating and then talking with other SLPs about it. Like, the more we talk about it, the more we acknowledge, like, what is acceptable, what is unacceptable, the more we put the pressure where the pressure needs to go to make positive change, then that's success. And that's the action, the action that I hope comes from, well, every episode, really.
Yeah. And I mean, so our whole thing is talking about, like, free access to education and resources. And I mean, there are so many great resources out there that aren't necessarily free. And I'm like you and I said, even before we did this, we don't have the answers. People deserve to get paid for their work. But also, like, I don't know, mentorship, we're missing that because we are on those little islands. And I feel like mentorship used to happen organically where we interact with our coworkers, where we get all these ideas, but when you're the only one, it's hard. And then I was even just talking to one of my, she's one of my friends, but she's my online friend. And she was just going, well, how do you get swallowing mentors? Cause I was talking about how one of my swallowing mentors is a badass, and I'm not going to go into what happened, but she's a badass. And she's like, well, how do I even get a swallowing mentor? And I was like, I mean, and for me, I met people through a lot of Facebook groups, and I know I can go to them and ask them pretty much anything, and they're willing to give me a little bit of that time. But when you don't have those organic relationships, and are they organic on Facebook? I don't know. I talk to anybody like they're my friend. Everyone's my friend, basically. But it's really hard for people to make those relationships, make those connections when you're all alone at your SNF. And then people create communities, and then people start charging for communities. And I don't know, I see a lot of that in every single community I'm a part of. Everyone is like, be my friend, but it's going to cost you $20. Wink. And it's, yeah. And I'm like, I'm free, bitch. I'm free.
This is the hardest conversation to have because we totally acknowledge when you are bringing a skill and a service to the table, we believe you should be compensated for that. And we know that within our field, there are limitations at work for a vast majority, not everybody, but for a majority of us, where we have limited time and limited finances to achieve that, or it's placed on us to do it on our own, outside of work, our own time, our own money. And where's the balance of that? What are we asking for? Are we asking for more people to offer up their services for free? Like, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there's, I'm not going to say her name, but someone and I, we want to do like a free journal club where we all can chat about it, or dysphagia and controversies. I mean, we're all not going to agree because even in when we're all in different settings, things are different and we're all, I don't know, we'll see if we end up doing it. I think it would be really great to have free mentorship. And I tried setting that up back when I was an admin of SLPs Uncensored, where we connected people, but I think that was right before COVID. I don't remember, but it's hard, and it's hard finding mentors, and it's hard, especially when you see other people getting paid for that kind of stuff, to want to give out free things. Cause just like you said, that pressure gets put on you of, well, you're doing work, why don't you get money for it? Like I said, I got a stupid thing on Instagram being like, make money from what you're already doing. And like, I don't want to be tied to that. I don't want to be tied to advertising those vibrators.
Julie's like, cause I'll do it for free.
Hey, you want some suggestions? I'm just saying, contact me. We'll give you my Insta handle.
I think you touched on it a little bit earlier, though. You mentioned, like, it's about forming those relationships. Like, a mentorship is a relationship. And I sometimes think that when we use the term mentorship, we really define very specific roles, and that information is kind of going in one way from the mentor to the mentee. But I feel like we need just more like colleague relationships where information is going back and forth, back and forth. We're teaching each other, we're challenging each other, and we're learning together. But that takes a relationship to start with, because otherwise some people might feel like attacked. Some people might feel threatened. Go ahead.
I actually took on my first student this year, which I had never done before, because I don't like having to be at work a certain time or anything, or like day. I'm not a fan of that. But with home health, I have to anyway. And I love my little baby student, and I'm pretty sure I've called her that to her face, so she knows I'm not being condescending. And she went to a very prestigious acute internship after me, and she's still texting me, and we're talking about different treatments, and she's showing me her her fees that she got done on herself. And it's, and I'm like, please tell me anything you learned there, because like, I would love to hear what they're doing there, because they're working with like lung transplants too, so like very fragile lungs. And I'm sitting here like, hey, student, how's it going? You know, like, feel free to give me some of that knowledge too, because more recently in school, might be more up to date on research, might have other connections in places that I don't have. And so I feel like, yeah, it is that relationship. And I want her to give me her dang information she gets there, because you never know. Well, and especially we were talking about that different settings too, right? Because like when they're more in acute, she and I actually had a conversation before she went on about how could she change her language in acute from what we got from some SLPs, where the patient was literally telling us, like, I got off track. The patient was literally telling us, you guys are wrong, these people are right. And it was really hard to like convince them in home health that, well, things are a little different. But anyway, we go back and forth, and I want to know what she wants to know, because just because I've been here for a long time doesn't mean I know everything. I don't know everything. Shit. No one should know everything. Actually, did you see that post by Therapy Insights?
Yeah.
Talk about how like not knowing, having that curiosity is what can bring us to good things versus, and I mean, I've definitely fallen prey to being like, I'm right about this, and I definitely wasn't. And then afterward, I was like, wow, I should have been a little more humble in how I approached it. Jeez, I got way off track.
A lot of good nuggets there, Julie, though. Like, I think you're totally right. I love how our conversation about access to education and resources has gone into like staying curious and not feeling like you know everything, and mentorship and relationship building. Like, we, as promised, the chaos is here.
Well, actually, that does bring up something, and I said we're not going to name names. However, I am just going to say this. I asked SLPs, because as being some, this does go to free access. So I was getting my first student, right? And I was like, what the hell do I even do? And unfortunately, my brother died literally her first week. She saw me cry probably more than anybody. We'll just say, I feel very bad for my student. But when I was looking like how to be a good supervisor, how to help, there, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I did ask, Asha doesn't have a free supervising CE, which is required to take a student. That's to my knowledge. But some people said you can get it through the university and they partner through them. However, like, if this is required, if this is how we're going to raise up the next bunch of SLPs, why the hell do we not have a free CE for supervision, teaching us how to be good supervisors, what kind of feedback to give? I have students from around the country messaging me about the things that their supervisors have said to them, or their friends, and I am just aghast. And I think we need, if a supervision course is necessary, which it should be, obviously, the things that I've heard, but even then, we're still taking these classes, and the things that are being said, oh my God. Like, I think that ASHA should provide free CEs for supervision and ethics too, if those two things are required, because, I mean, there's lots of ethically sketchy behavior that's going on right now. But the supervision one, that's how we're teaching these speech therapists. That's how we're helping raise them up. Yet I have to pay for that damn class. I don't know. It just, what if someone's a great supervisor? They don't want to put down the money for that. You know, who knows? I could just, yeah, I called ASHA out. They should have that one for free. And before you tell me it's through the universities, it's super easy. Cool. But if it's actually required, and even then we kind of can mentor our colleagues as well, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just like I said, I have swallowing mentors who I message going, what do you think about this? And if we all took supervision courses on how to like help guide people in their learning, I do feel like that would be helpful, and it should be free. It should be right on the front page. Oh, you're going to supervise someone? Take this bad boy. Here you go. Or else we have people who have no idea how to teach, no idea how to connect with people, saying just the rudest ass shit I have ever heard. Oh my God. Like, someone told me their supervisor lined up and gave them a list of 2 pages of everything they did wrong in every session.
Whoa.
I was like, how does that help someone learn?
Yikes.
Anyway, yeah. I think that would be free.
Okay. Some wild, wild west action happening out there.
I know. And if we had a really good supervisory, is that the right way to say that word? Course. I can't help but feel like it might be a little better instead of going the roundabout way being like, well, maybe that school has a good one. Maybe this school has a good one. Maybe. I don't know. I didn't even look for my student. I found one on the Learning Pass, which I have for free through my job.
Well, Julie, I love that for you. So, Julie, tell me how you put like free access into practice. Like, how do you achieve that? What do you do besides, you know, come on the podcast and we rant and rave about it?
Well, I mean, I have people who ask me questions and I do help them out. Or one of the reasons why I'm very good at social media is I have really good memory for random things. So like someone messages me and they're like, oh, I have a question about this. I'm like, oh, this one person talked about that once 5 years ago. Try reaching out to them. But like I provide free access, to my knowledge. I do, ask people for help quite a lot, and I'm sure they're like this bitch again. But I also know there's access to, cheaper resources, or like Informed SLP is so cheap. Or even just people who give out free resources, like Honeycomb sends out some free things, or she puts together things for, I used her PROMs, the patient reported outcome measures, where she gave out a bunch of things. And so those, I will send people to their, to those where there's free handouts, free emails. I think even Tactus Therapy had like some good semantic feature analysis that was free. And yeah, in the end, good access can come at a price, and I don't know how to solve that yet. I can also relate this back to vibrators if we want to go there.
Well, I'm intrigued, so now you have to follow through.
Well, I was just thinking about like quality of orgasms. That's where we're going with this one. And like, we all have access to hands, or some people to partners. But in order to get really good, high-quality orgasms, access to vibrators costs money. And don't we all deserve quality orgasms?
I am dying over here. I've never even, my mind, it's all over the place right now. Oh, what a great analogy. Julie, you are not wrong.
I'm just saying, like, I mean, we all have access to those free things. I am putting my hands up right now for those listening. But like, in the end, wouldn't it be better if we all had access to the things that cost a little more money? And this is when we turn into socialists and communists, right?
Well, I'm a little confused because I almost feel like you're making a solid case for like spending the money on the quality thing that gets the job done.
I mean, I'm not going to deny if I have spent money on things that I have. But I mean, if those things were less expensive or, I don't know, handed out for free, I think it'd be better for all instead of just the people who can't actually afford them. Because some are really expensive. Especially if we're talking about like quality. Does higher price just mean better quality? I don't know. I was sent an email once of someone, and I don't know who it was. They put out an email being like, so I put this product out and not many people took advantage of it because they didn't value it enough. So I raised the price and I raised the price and I raised the price again so that people knew what the value of it was. And I mean, there's something to be said, like if you're paying money for something, you're more likely to use it versus free things. But I don't know, something, it just doesn't really sit great with me that people would raise the price, especially like in a pandemic when people are losing their jobs and all this kind of stuff going on, but we don't have to get into that, do we?
I think that's a really good point you bring up about like when we're invested in something, we're more likely to use it or to learn or gain something from it. So sometimes free things don't hold weight with us, but when we have to spend money on it, especially our own money, like then we're going to follow through. But I prefer to think of it like sweat equity. Like I volunteered with Habitat for Humanity for a while, many years ago. And for the people who are going to own and live in the home that's being built for them, you know, quote, for free, there is a required amount of hours of sweat equity. So like they are participating in the building of their home just because they can't afford the monetary aspect of building and living and owning a home. Doesn't mean that they're not going to like not appreciate it, not value it. And so when they have the opportunity to be a part of its construction, it's really fun to see that ownership already beginning before they even have the keys.
Yeah. So I don't know how we can translate that to education or materials.
Basically, everyone needs to start their own podcast because that is some sweat equity right there. You become invested in that information and that passage of knowledge, and you really want other people to benefit from it and learn and gain.
Well, and I mean, it does, I don't know if it does argue, but it brings up that like everybody knowing more and better will in the end make our jobs easier. Because for me, the hardest part of my job is literally every single day I am fighting against the misconceptions about dysphagia. Literally, that is probably the hardest part of my job, whether it was in a hospital where you might even be fighting other SLPs, or a lot of my roadblocks is coming up against adult family homeowners who are like, this person coughed, please thicken, and then just leave. And in the end, yeah, I know, it's really stressful. That's literally the hardest part of my job. But in the end, if I give out more of my knowledge, that will make my job easier. And if we were able to reach these adult family homeowners, I don't know, do you know what adult family homes are?
No.
Oh, they're like five or six people in one home with usually an RN owning it. And then they have CNAs on a daily basis. And they're huge here in Washington. I go to a couple a week. And I would love them for my family member. My brother is disabled. And hopefully one day he'll be able to get into one with mildly younger people. Because you just get more personalized care. Obviously, not all of them are perfect, you know. But the owners, they really just want you to come in and just say, here's Nectar, or any assisted living, here's Nectar, they're coughing, or can you please put them on puree, they're coughing. And in the end, the more knowledge that we give, even if it is quote unquote free, whatever, it makes our lives easier. So that's kind of how I look at when I want to disseminate knowledge, like putting that information out there makes my life easier in the end, even though I'm not necessarily getting paid for doing anything, but I'm obviously not creating a ton of materials. I'm not doing anything like that because there are things out there that make your life easier, but I just give my patients ugly ass handwritten notes, or I, you know, use my hand to simulate something, their airway. Here's their airway. And then this is your epiglottis. It's covering it. Woo. But you could also spend the money and find a beautiful larynx, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know. And I could, I don't know the answer for any of it.
Well, I feel like we've covered our topic pretty well. I feel like we've hit the points we vaguely identified that we wanted to.
It's like,
I'm just gonna out us real, real hardcore. We just wanted to come on and just like see where this conversation went, if anywhere. So I'm down with that. You got some pretty cool resources for our show notes. Do you want to describe that real quick?
Yes. Well, and I'll be honest, this was provided by the PhD student at jkim.slp on Instagram. I saw him make a really great comment. Free access. This is why we need free access in education, because it can lead to gatekeeping and poor patient care. And so, so he sent me some place to get open access research. I'm not going to name all of them. But I also just did in March, was it March? I don't remember. No, I don't know. May, a presentation for all the nurses in one area of my home health company. And they were just like blown away. I just got emails being like, what? I'm not supposed to recommend a chin tuck for everybody? You know, and like people being like, wow, there's so much more to this than I ever thought. Thickening isn't the answer to all the problems. And I'm not trying to mock nurses or anything. But like I said, that's very prevalent everywhere. And I mean, just one simple little presentation did so much to help reduce my stress. Like, I'm not going to thicken that person on hospice's liquids unless they're coughing so hard it's really bothering them, you know? So anyway, some of us are just tired.
I hear you. I feel it. I was too. I took a 9-month hiatus. I didn't realize how tired I was. It all caught up with me.
And we missed you, even though I don't even love podcasts. I just missed you. I was like, where the hell is Leanne?
I know I did a really bad job, but that's just because I have mixed feelings about when people like announce that they're taking a break, because it feels awkward. But then on the flip side of that, like, oh, you're going to not tell anybody? Like, that's rude. So I went with rude, I guess. I went with non-action. I did not purposely try to be rude. I just went with non-action. I was in the non-action frame of reference, and that's what happened.
I don't think it was rude at all. Like, I'm sorry, but we are in the middle of crazy shit. Like, someone taking a break in the middle of the pandemic, not surprising. And especially, like you said, feeling that pressure, like, I should be making money off this thing I'm putting money into, but how is that going to affect everything?
Yeah. And it never sat well, and it kept making me uncomfortable, and it felt forced. And I know sometimes you do need to do hard things and overcome challenges, but it did not align with my values and my beliefs. And that was where the friction was coming from. And it took me a while to identify that, to be like, why doesn't this feel good? Why is this so hard for me? Why am I struggling with something that appears a lot easier? And it was a misalignment with my values.
I don't know. You're right. Like, things don't always align with values, but you see someone else like getting that bag, and you're like, oh, I mean, I could be making money doing this. Why am I the dumb one? And that's kind of how it feels. Why am I the dumb one who's doing this shit for free when everyone else is making money off of it? Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's not like, I mean, I am friends with some business owners who do make money, and I'm super happy for them. I'm not saying that the way that they do things is wrong at all. It's just, it's really hard to, oh, there's another thing coming out that I need to spend money on, when I would like a vacation. and a vacation from speech shit too.
For reals. Yeah. When I took my break, I took a break from all online speech stuff. Like, it just, and it was really restorative.
Well, and hopefully it just helps open people's minds to building organic relationships, to try to be a two-sided thing, because not everything has to be from this is this expert and I'm learning from them. But a lot of my practice has come from talking to other SLPs who are in the fucking field. Like, what are you doing today? What's going on? Okay, well, this is what's going on for me, versus someone who's been out of the field for 5 years. They haven't seen patients in however long. And I feel like sometimes that can feel condescending, or just this is this expert who's telling me exactly what I'm supposed to do, when, like, did you have to see 10 patients yesterday and write good notes that are justifying why you're there? No? Okay.
You have stressed me out. We need to wrap up on, like, a positive note, Julie. This has to be upbeat. This has to be inspiring. Come on. We got to rally.
I mean, I'm just inspiring being myself. I don't really need words to inspire people.
I love it. An end scene. Julie, thank you. As always, a joy, a roller coaster ride, an absolute treat. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Leanne.
And to all of our listeners, I hope you can take what you will, throw out the rest, as always, with every episode, not just this one, and go out there and nourish and flourish and be awesome.
Agreed.